Welcome back to Pax Europiana, the podcast about peace, Europe, economics and EU enlargement, and about these beautiful countries which are candidates now and which should be in the European Union very fast. This one here is part of my country-specific series, and I will talk now about a very beautiful country you definitely should visit and you definitely should support to join the European Union already now. I'm talking about 2024. Parliamentarians from Montenegro should vote in the European Parliament already, and that would be wonderful. I make it clear, everybody who is against that should not consider himself a pro-European, or for me will be accused as a Russian asset. So no joke, it's serious. Who is against Montenegro is against Europe and against NATO. And this is absolutely important, because Montenegro is an ally. That means something. It's obvious that membership of an alliance powerful as NATO should also trigger the solidarity of all members, also when it comes to European Union membership. And I have just called now on my Twitter feed also for the American president, POTUS, to tackle Mr. Macron, the French president, who is the opponent, if not the enemy, of all new countries, because he is blocking them in his powerful position in the EU Council, and nobody else can stop him because he has this powerful position. So we need American leadership here in Paris to stop this intransigence and obstinate rejectionism, and the background obviously is pro-Serbian and pro-Russian appeasement. And so he wants to stop Montenegro, and that's a big pity. That's an outrageous scandal of huge proportion, and I call on American power to face down with President Macron. He is the problem. He and his French powerful anti-Balkan, anti-NATO, anti-Ukrainian positions are a major problem. Anyhow, but this is about Montenegro. And I will now describe you this beautiful country. It's a small country. It's really like a very small, beautiful. It's only 600,000 people. So it is not a lot of cost to integrate a new country in the European Union, which is only 600,000 people, because it's like a medium-sized city, actually, in America and in Europe. And it is not economically, it's a very small budget item when it comes to cohesion. It's a bit more expensive for infrastructure because obviously it's a mountainous country. The country's name, Montenegro, is the country of the Black Mountain. They call themselves in Montenegrin language Crnogore. That's Black Mountain. Because what it is, you have a small strip of about 110 kilometers of amazing and beautiful coast. Very beautiful. In the south, it's already like the Albanian coast with huge sand coast, about 20 kilometers, the so-called Big Beach. And that's a flat, sandy, beautiful beach going into Albania already. That I described already in the Albanian podcast, where the Skada Lake, this is a big lake, mainly in Montenegro, but mostly in Montenegro, but then already in the south. And then a river comes, and that river is united with the big river of the south of the Balkans, the Drina River, which comes from the Ohrid Lake, goes down along the Albanian-Macedonian border area towards then Skadra, the big city for which Montenegro and Albania, or the Ottoman Empire and later Albania, have fought so many battles. Yeah. This is the contested borderland, and the pearl of it is, of course, Skadra and Skodra. And it's just south of Skadra, and there starts this river. It's only 10 kilometers, and this is called the Buna River. It's the border river, more or less the border river, with Montenegro and Albania. And there you see these big items which are important to understand the geography. This huge beach, the Ulcin Beach, perfect for kitesurfing. When you go there in the summer, especially in August, you see hundreds of sails up there. It's amazing because there's always wind. It's beautiful flat sand beach. It's actually very close. You can even drive from Vienna or from Munich or from Venice. You can basically, in your car, you will be there in about 12 hours under current driving conditions. Obviously, you pass a lot of beautiful places because the whole Croatian coast, that's the country in the north of Montenegro, is also very beautiful. But sand beaches only start exactly after Bar in the village in the city of Ulcin. That's also the Albanian inhabited, mainly Albanian inhabited, south of Montenegro, the city of Ulcin, the city of Tuzi. And Montenegro is a very multicultural, multi-ethnic and open country. They have come over all this kind of Serbian terror and genocidal narratives, and they have recently now also given a kind of a new autonomy, own municipality, and towards one of these municipalities. Ulcin had it already, and Tuzi has now also this municipality status. That is really groundbreaking. Of course, I understand for the global world, it's not the biggest news, but it is a sign of the respect of the different ethnic groups, the Bosnians, the Albanians, the Serbs, the Montenegrinians, and there is a difference, and I will talk about this one as well. But there is relative harmony. It's a success model of clear Western integration, which started basically after the Bosnian War. The Montenegrinians were still allies and part of this terror regime of Milosevic in until the end of the Bosnian Wars. But with the Dayton Agreement and the political battles afterwards, Djukanovic has gradually distanced himself from Serbian Milosevic and the terror of that regime, and he was smart enough to see his future in the West. It's one of these success stories where countries really improve themselves. From the terror and from the disasters of the Bosnian War, Montenegro has purified itself and has understood and saw the light in the West. Of course, Montenegro also in all its history very much attached to the Adriatic world, open to the Adriatic world, and then they changed the direction. They were not even anymore a member of the Kosovo War and the Serbian system. They were still part of this kind of Yugoslavia, but they didn't participate anymore from the side of the Montenegrin authorities in the Kosovo War. And afterwards, the split was clear. They introduced the German mark as currency, ended the Serbian dinar, the Yugoslavian dinar, and then they split gradually. Unfortunately, European appeasement was leading to forcing Montenegro for another 6 years to stay in the state union, it was called then, with Serbia. But they really wanted to leave. And if the Solana wouldn't have insisted on this process of a very gradually divorce, then Montenegro would not have had to wait until 2006, because with a very clear direction, they wanted to get rid of this Serbia already by then. But it took until 2006. The referendum was additionally made difficult by Solana, by a so-called Entlajak, actually. That's the Slovak negotiator. Solana was our foreign policy chief at that time. He is possibly the best of the European Union foreign policy chiefs in that position since it was created. He was the first one. He was the best. He is, you know, he was obviously the best, but he was also, you know, the best from a very weak group. Let me tell you that. I'm definitely not a fan of any of the European foreign policy experts or whatever it's called, high representative for foreign policy. And Solana was the best, there's no doubt. I had recently a Twitter debate about his track record, but I want to apologize because he is the best of all of them up to now. That doesn't mean a lot, but I'm not critical for his role as NATO Secretary General. He was obviously liberating Kosovo. Thanks a lot. He's a hero for that. But in Montenegro, then as a high representative for the EU, he has made a lot of steps to make it very complicated, especially the 55 hurdle. But it was done in May 2006, more than 55. Whenever it was close. have voted for independence. Montenegro then was again an independent country in 2006. And this is something to be celebrated. Every 13th of July, it is the Montenegrin Independence Day. And this is very important date in history because it is the second independence of Montenegro, because already on the 13th of July at the Berlin Congress, close to 150 years ago, in the 1878, it's now 140-something, and this was, of course, a very special day. Here, Montenegro got already its independence internationally recognized and approved in the Berlin Congress. And it's a kind of second independence because, unfortunately, due to the disasters of the First World War, Montenegro was one of the victims of the Paris Peace because it lost its independence. Basically, Serbia had the military power to occupy it, and it invaded some will say liberated Serbia in 1918. And on the 1st of December 1918, the Kingdom of Yugoslavia was not Yugoslavia. That was the idea, and it was called like that. But the real name was the Kingdom of Slovenia, Croatia. That is the two former Austrian parts, and then Serbia. But in reality, it was the Kingdom of Serbia. And the Slovenians and the Croatians only joined because they had only one alternative to be an Italian colony, and they didn't really want that for sure. And the Serbia was the only army around. So Serbia basically swallowed these two regions of Austria, and also Austria annexed Bosnia. That was the three parts of Austria, and also the coastal Montenegro. Everything around Kotor, the Kotor Bay, that was Austria, because Austria took it over from Venetia. And basically, people there felt like Venetians. Yeah? They were, for history, part of the Italian-Venetian Empire about 1,000 years, from 900 or something, maybe around the year 1000, to exactly the Vienna Congress when Venice was divided up. And that part of the Eastern Mediterranean was taken over by the Austrian Empire, as was much of Italy under Austrian control. And then it was the case for a long time. There were still a lot of old people in the Bay of Kotor. They speak Italian, they watch Italian, and there's a lot of Italian kind of cultural influence. Also, a lot of people there are still Catholic, and part of this inheritance, especially in the older cities, the parts which is not sold to international investors now and to Russian money launderers, but mostly to the whole world is now investing in these beautiful and amazing parts of Montenegro. But I'm rushing ahead. This is the coast. The coast has all these beautiful assets. Dubrovnik is most famous, obviously, but beyond Dubrovnik, only 20 kilometers, 10 kilometers is already the Montenegrin coast. And here this wonderful, beautiful 25-kilometer long fjord, kind of, yes, like a Norwegian fjord with huge mountains around. And it's three bays, one and another. It's amazing scenery, and the whole world is investing there because it's one of the most beautiful bays. In the summer, the weather is always continuously 3 months very good, so there's rarely a rainy day. Maybe you have 3-4 rainy days in a season of July and August, but that's it. And you have obviously a lot of rain the rest of the year. But, you know, rain and the sea, it's a unit. You have to see that. But it's very beautiful, and it's this great Venetian architecture. And the most important cities are called Kotor, obviously, Peras, the very beautiful place, Herceg Novi, and then also Tivat with this huge new marina, which was built after independence, a beautiful modern kind of Mediterranean place where a lot of super yachts are now lying. And there's also another one in Kumbur, a second one called Porto Novi. It's now a 6-star resort. That's quite unique in Europe. And it's one of the most beautiful places in the world, I think, certainly in Europe. Yeah, Herceg Novi I mentioned, beautiful. stone palaces and amazing city. A city, it's smaller cities, you know, these are not huge urban conglomerates. These are a tourist village with this kind of Venetian stone structure, this Mediterranean beautiful architecture. And it's all with a specific history, and you have to see it once in a lifetime. It's important to see this beautiful bay. But also in the south, then you cross the mountains, you come to Budva, and that's a more touristic, kind of mass touristic city. It's the center of tourism industry in Montenegro. It's also very beautiful with an amazing old town and this typical Dalmatian architecture, which many know from Croatia. And this is repeated in, of course, Kotor, then Budva. And also Bar is very beautiful down in the south. That's more industrial town. It's the main harbor. It will have in the future of the Balkans a big role because it's the only real deep sea harbor. And as Montenegro is in NATO, this will be basically the major entry point of the military and other supplies. And this is basically the energy harbor and the military harbor and the big supply station for the Balkans. This will be the role of Montenegro, of Bar. And it was meant like that from the beginning. It was built as, it was part, this was actually the border. Bar was then already part of the Kingdom of Montenegro, and it was no longer part of the Austrian Empire. The border was exactly going south of Budva and north of Bar. And then you go back to Ulcin, and we have closed our short circle of this beautiful landscape, and all of it is amazing. And one day there will be also wisdom to build the highway, which was promised since 2014, the North-South highway, and that was called the Adriatic-Ionian Highway along the coast. The Croatians are very serious in finishing it now, but I remember there was already promised by the former Prime Minister Senada the highway to be finished in 2012 to Dubrovnik, and there are still 100 kilometers missing. But now, with the help of Chinese funding, because the EU is again sleeping and stingy, and the Croatians took the Chinese funding, and they built this turnaround bridge, which is bypassing the Neum corridor. That's the part of Bosnia where Bosnia was granted 10 kilometers of Croatian coast in the peace agreements in order to have a sea outlet. And that is, of course, creating border difficulties. And the Croatians simply, with help of the Chinese, built now in one of the islands a super bridge, very beautiful, ready in 2021 or two, let's see. And then it will be much easier to reach Dubrovnik, while as there is another 100 kilometer missing, and then it's another 120 kilometer missing through Montenegro, and there's another about 50 kilometer missing in Albania. And unfortunately, I always make this kind of remark, forgive me, that Putin, our opponent, he conquered Crimea, and he built this kind of bridge from Russia into Crimea over the Kerch Straits. He built it in 5 years, and it's open already since 2019. It's a big scandal. It's illegal, but he did it with 5 billion. We in Europe are, again, as we are, you know, having committees, talking a lot of things and not agreeing on anything. And we have not built anything in 5, 6 years on that. Only the Croatians. That's a pity, and that's a problematic. Obviously, the Montenegrins are also to blame because they thought the priority is to build a big bridge from a big highway from Podgorica to the north. That's very densely popular, and that's very almost there's a little population in the north because the population centers in Montenegro are very easy explained. It's the coast, obviously, I explained it, and then there is a kind of a strip of lowland which goes from the Montenegro from the Bosnian border in Niksic. That's a big urban settlement in the center of Montenegro, and then it's Danilovgrad along a kind of valley, and then you come to the big lowlands. This was basically the part, still part of the Ottoman Empire, and this was Podgorica. That's now the capital, and in these lowlands, most of the people live because that's agriculture, industry, not a lot of industry, mostly from Yugoslavian times, and basically a ruin or a kind of a disaster. It's an aluminium company, which is the most famous case. And that means that a country which doesn't have enough energy even for its household got presented by Yugoslavia an aluminium factory, which you know very well, it's a lot of energy required for that. And it was always a disaster. It was later sold to Deripaska, as most aluminium in the world is. And then it was a complete fight with the Montenegrin government about energy prices, no surprise. And then it's a big mess and it's a disaster. Anyhow, that's the legacy of Yugoslavia. I think all these factories should be closed and then sanitized in terms of environmental damage. And it's better we buy our aluminium from Brazil or Australia, where there is also the energy to sustain it. Yeah. Anyhow, that's another topic, but it's important. The fact is, this is the lowlands, and this lowlands lead then already to Ulcin, and I have and to the more Albanian inhabited parts of the south of Montenegro. So I think I covered that one. So the geography gets already very clear, and then beyond Podgorica, immediately start the huge mountains, yeah, and they go to Kosovo and to Serbia and to Albania, and that's all really huge mountains. It's rarely populated. There is not a lot of urban places. It's wonderful for wild water rafting. That's really wonderful. And it's beautiful at the Tara River and at all these Drin rivers in the north, the Bosnian Drina. It's beautiful. It's amazing. It's really astonishing. Even Bill Gates did it in 2019, actually. I actually did it as well in 2019, but I didn't meet Bill Gates there. But it's something spectacular to do. I recommend it very much. And then it's also, you see, this decision to build the highway from Podgorica north is more connected to the idea to connect to Belgrade. Yeah. And of course, it's also economically good because there is obviously a lot of people who can go faster to Podgorica. But it was extremely expensive to do it. Again, the Chinese did it because everybody else rejected the huge costs and the huge responsibilities. But the Chinese do that. They know what to do and they did it beautifully, nicely, fine. But overall, the real economic future of Montenegro is connected with Croatia and Albania and not with Serbia, because Serbia is in decline. And the idea that all the Serbs will go continuously to Montenegro for holiday is obviously an illusion. There's many other places Serbs can go. And this traditional kind of only going to Montenegro was obviously connected to the being in a state union. And also that everything else was extremely expensive given the huge devaluation of the Serbian dinar. And also that there was, of course, a lot of family links and other reasons. But I think that is not the future. The real future of Montenegro is to connect much more with Central Europe, with Italy, and also to build the Adriatic Highway. That should be immediately the priority of the new government. But I guess the new government will do something else. I'm not a big fan of them, unfortunately. While the good thing is, there was first time now a real change in the government after 30 years, which was normally always dominated by the ex-Yugoslavian Socialist Party, the so-called DPS. So the first time they are in opposition, and that's very good, you know, that's very good for the democratic development. If the new coalition, which just started in 2020, will be really stabilizing the trajectory towards the European Union, as I wish, yeah, we have to see. And how internally stable that is, we have to see as well. There's many disturbing news coming from Montenegro, but in this celebrating kind of mood I'm now for Montenegro in 2024, I will talk about it in one of the next podcasts. Now again for geography, huge mountains and then the highway going to a village in the center of Montenegro. And now the question is how to continue the highway. Montenegro has spent all its public resources towards And this half highway, the first 100 kilometers to the north, now over there were 70 kilometers. Now Montenegro has no money anymore to build anything further. Obviously, from there, from Mateševo, where this now ends, you have to drive on the same old road to Serbia or to Kosovo. And here is my proposal also for the international authorities, the European partners. Now we have all this extra Corona funding. It's very important to talk to the Montenegrinian authorities not to build the Serbian highway further, but make a deviation with a tunnel towards Kosovo. And that's very important because Kosovo is our ally. There's the NATO forces, KFOR, and we need a better year-long connection with Montenegro, and therefore it's needed to build a tunnel. That's the first priority. And the second priority is the north-south highway. That means from the village in Montenegro, the city in Bosnia, is called Trebinje. And from Trebinje south to Niksic, Podgorica to Skadar. And this is the most important highway together with the tunnel to Kosovo. And only this should be funded by the European authorities. And be a bit generous, not only funded in terms of loans, but also there needs to be massive subsidies, because Montenegro has a small taxpayer base, but huge mountains to bridge. And obviously that's very expensive and Montenegro cannot do that alone. So these are the two most important infrastructure projects, together also with the development of the seaport as a NATO harbor and as the gateway for the Southern Balkans, and the attached necessity to renovate the railway links to Albania, and because that Albanian railway link can also, with some investment, also link to Macedonia and Thessaloniki. So we are all on NATO territory here with a modern railway link once it's finished and renovated, with a modern highway link, and that's really very good. And then you can drive from Germany, from Central Europe, from Brussels on a highway and directly to Athens. And that should be the priority, and also connect that very well with the railway system. Also at the later stage, to connect the railway system of Croatia and Bosnia with the railway system of Montenegro, that also Serbia can be basically isolated as long as it doesn't join NATO. And that, I think, is the main priority now, infrastructure-wise. Unfortunately, the EU, again, for appeasement of Serbia, does all the contrary, but that's a major mistake. Anyhow, I hope wisdom will come now when Biden is back, and there will be some improvement. When it comes to the situation of NATO, I mentioned already the success. Just in 11 years after independence, Montenegro was NATO member. I mean, that's unbelievable. It's very good, yeah. And that's one of the major successes for peace in the Balkans in the last 20 years. And it's a real breakthrough, Macedonia as well. So that's basis, or that's also the basis for the three NATO members, Albania, Montenegro and North Macedonia, to join the European Union already in this mandate, and to get all the things speeded up and accelerated, because we must have lost our minds if we risk the development of Montenegro, Albania, Macedonia, and with it the whole Balkans, by further delaying the accession of these three beautiful countries. Yes, what to tell you about Montenegro history? I told you Berlin Congress, that's most important. I told you about the Balkan Wars, obviously that was atrocious fights and terrible. And then also about the Kosovo Liberation War. And there's much to talk about the World War II, the First World War, all the crimes Austrians and Germans have committed against the Montenegrinians. And maybe it's good to start with an apology, so close with an apology. It was terrible, and we are very sorry. We should reach out our hands to the Montenegrin people and build a new level of friendship. I try what I can in the last years when I'm active in Montenegro, and it's very important. But we should also invest in a museum of Austrian-Montenegrinian friendship in Cetinje. That's a beautiful town in the former capital of where is also the Austrian-Hungarian embassy. But what is needed is a major public investment by Austria into Cetinje to build a museum, possibly in the old embassy, but maybe there's another location to say sorry for the crimes we committed in the First World War. And the Germans should do the same also in Cetinje, which is in a way a very beautiful museum town now. There is already 7 museums and it's a beautiful location. And there should be a second museum by Germany built as a goodwill gesture for the crimes committed against the Montenegrinians in the Second World War. And actually the Italians should do the same, because it was also the Italians who attacked and killed a lot of people in beautiful Montenegro during the Second World War. So I call for these 3 museums, the Austrian Museum in Cetinje, the German Museum in Cetinje, and the Italian Museum in Cetinje, and also Cetinje to be one of these magnets of tourism and also of reconciliation of people. We did many things wrong in the past. We are here to make it good. We want to be friends of the Montenegrinian people. And I really recommend Montenegro very strong to be already in 2024 sending parliamentarians to the European Parliament, and also to be that everybody, I think, in the world should at least once in their lifetime travel to this beautiful country. Podgorica has a very modern airport. It is also accessible via Tivat Airport or via Dubrovnik in Croatia. Driving will be, it's still a challenge, to be honest, because of our lack of courage to build things faster. But I think by the end of this decade, at least, and there will be also decent highways in Montenegro to go until Athens. But the things, as we do it so slowly in Europe, I think it will maybe take 20 years, because we are so sleepy in Europe, when you compare it to the Americans. And maybe America will have time also to sort Europe out and speed some things up in Europe, because we are definitely a bit lost in translation and a bit sleepy. But with some American backing, I think there can be faster progress. And then also driving by car from Central Europe up to Greece ultimately will be also more feasible. There are a lot of people who do it already, and it's an unforgettable experience, because it's probably one of the most beautiful coastal roads in the world. Don't get me wrong. If you take time and if your driving is your aim, then definitely you have to do it. The whole of this eastern Adriatic coast from Rijeka, this beautiful city which played also such a big role in European history, until Athens is amazing. It's so beautiful, and it has deserved to be in the European Union. So I call on America, please help Montenegro, your ally, and Albania and North Macedonia to be in the European Union. It has well deserved, it's well ready, and it's time to get it done. And talk sense to Macron, because it's too much of his kind of rejectionism. Visit beautiful Montenegro. It's definitely worth it. You will enjoy and support Montenegro to be a EU member in 2024. Thanks for listening.